This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCO.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Hello and welcome to Herding Code. This episode is being recorded Wednesday, August 24th. Our guest tonight is Ryan Stewart. Ryan is a developer evangelist with Adobe, and he's here to educate all of us ignorant fools on the ways of Adobe and Flex and Flash and Air and Edge and like 50,000 other things. And we'll probably even touch on Cold Fusion, I bet. So welcome, Ryan. Do you want to talk a little bit about yourself?
Definitely. So my name is Ryan Stewart. As Scott mentioned, I have been working for Adobe as a developer evangelist for a little bit over 4 years now. And I kind of got to that position because back 5 to 6 years ago, I was focusing pretty heavily on the whole concept of rich internet applications and what at that time was WPFE and then became Silverlight, as well as Flex and Air. And so I was kind of focused on the whole idea of rich client applications and joined Adobe shortly after that to kind of help drive some of the awareness around what they were doing.
Great. And is there any one area that you still focus on? Is it still rich internet applications, or have you branched out? Or
yeah, still sort of generally that. I think as everyone has sort of noticed by now, things have moved pretty drastically from this idea of really rich applications in the browser to now more mobile applications. So I think that my focus is still, you know, basically what we like to call cool shit on the client side. But that now represents, you know, JavaScript. It could be mobile applications. It could be still some, you know, Flash games in the browser. So that's kind of, it's a fairly broad scope, but in general, that's what I focus on and what I tend to follow and track and that kind of thing.
Cool. So I think the first thing that we might talk about here, at least I'm going to ask, and we'll just get it out of the way, it's kind of the pricing. So a lot of, at least in my opinion, a lot of the pricing of Adobe DevTools is kind of set out of the reach of beginners, not necessarily students, but devs who want to learn like Flex and Flash or tools like that. And, you know, so you go in there and you think, oh, well, I'm going to go buy a tool. And most people get, at least on the Microsoft side, they get their Visual Studio given to them by the company, or they get an MSDN subscription and whatnot. Is there anything like that? Is there any kind of grand subscription you can get for Adobe that would allow you to just use like the Creative Suite? Or do you really have to shell out the, I don't even know, what is it, $5,000 now for the big giant mama?
It's not quite that bad. I think it's like $3,200, I think. But yeah. I think to use everything, cause that includes the video stuff, that includes the web stuff, it includes the core design tools like Photoshop. So I don't run into a lot of people who actually need everything from Adobe. But so that said, the tools are definitely priced at a premium. And I think a lot of that is, you know, if there are a bunch of factors there, it's the general kind of audience who we sell to in terms of agencies and big companies who have that kind of money to spend. We take into account things like piracy and the impact that that has. So the tools are definitely expensive. We did recently open up, I guess, for this version of Creative Suite, a subscription model. So you can subscribe for a certain number of months to the Creative Suite and get some of the tools that you need. And on the developer side, because it's really the core Creative Suite tools, on the developer side, the tools are a little bit cheaper, and I think we're still as a company trying to figure out what the best model is for the developer tools in terms of getting those to customers. We did a thing in the past couple of years ago, or maybe a year and a half ago now, where if you were put out of work or you were laid off, we would give you the tools for free and some resources to learn the technology, so that if you wanted to jump into the tech world, or if you were someone who was developing in older languages and wanted to learn Flash or Flex, we would give you those tools for free. So we've tried to do things to make them a little bit more accessible. And I think, especially on the developer side, we're always looking for ways to do more of that.
And over the years, I've seen, I think Adobe's been pretty good about a lot of the things, you know, PDF and Flash format and things like that are open specifications. And so there are some, you know, inexpensive or open source apps for working with those. I mean, obviously, you'd want to sell the full tool, but do I have that right? That those are, I mean, those are legit other ways of doing some entry level development?
Yeah, there. Yeah, definitely. In fact, you know, the Flex SDK is completely open source, and that includes the, you know, the compiler and all the tool, all everything that you would need to make a Flex app or even a Flash app. So you can open up TextMate and then use the open source compiler. And kind of one of the big differences between Adobe and Microsoft is that Microsoft sells not only the tools but also the platform with, you know, with Windows and the servers with, you know, with SQL Server and with Windows or Internet Information Server. We really just have the tools. There are a couple of server pieces there, but we really just have the tools, and so we're not in a position where we can subsidize some of the cost of that as easily as other companies. But we do so as far as like the premium developer experience, you know, that will always be paid for, but there are still, we try to make it easy for independent folks and people who are, you know, using other tools to at least plug into the Flash world and with things like the open source SDK.
Now, one place if I've got this right, that's different is in video, right? Like on the server that you have licensing and stuff for video delivery. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, that is. So yeah, we definitely, there's a whole, what we call Flash Media Server, which is really around, yeah, streaming video that has to be content protected. We've got some peer-to-peer video and stuff in there. So there's the streaming video side of video. We definitely have a server infrastructure in place that hooks into the wider Flash world. But that makes a good chunk of money for us, but it's also not something that every developer wants to do. So it's not quite as broad on the server side as other companies.
So kind of as a crazy aside, one of the things that I thought would be interesting for Adobe to do would to actually, because there's kind of this, at least in the press, there's this, you know, war between Apple and Adobe as far as Flash goes on iOS devices and whatnot. But, you know, your bread and butter is more on the app side, the tool side. And so what I always thought would be interesting would be if Adobe would release like their own appliances, maybe with Unix or BSD or something underneath as the boot operating system, kind of like the old video toasters. I don't know if anyone is old enough to remember those.
Yep.
Where you get like the whole video processing app or the whole, you know, multimedia kind of processing appliance that you could, you know, because that's the really, I think that you hit it on the head. The main consumers are, you know, the big Hollywood agencies, the big ad agencies who need to produce these very high quality things. And most of the piracy probably goes towards the kid who wants something a little bit more than paint that came installed with Windows, but you know, can't afford $700 for Photoshop, but or the people that just think, well, I got to use Photoshop because that's the best. Anyway, that's my craziest side.
Yeah, I think that would be interesting if Adobe, I don't think Adobe will ever do that, but I do think it'd be kind of, it's always an interesting idea to think about, you know, especially as Flash kind of evolves and changes, is there room for it in some more sophisticated capacities, you know, the display layer for an operating system or something like that. But I think that's more of a low-level creative thinking and not something that would ever actually happen.
At least not from Adobe. Some crazy person might release their own operating system or...
That's something. And to, I mean, Flash would have a lot of, there'd have to be a lot of changes made to Flash too to kind of enable something like that. But it's, you know, for all of its faults, there's still a lot of very powerful things that go on in the Flash player. So it'd be kind of, you know, it's kind of a cool thought process, even if nothing will ever come of it.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be kind of like a huge paradigm shift and just insane thinking, like, you know, saying that your next version of your primary operating system, you're going to be able to write, I don't know, HTML and JavaScript apps for it.
Yeah, so exactly. That would be pretty insane.
So, any more kind of general questions?
Well,
anyone?
Well, I mean, yeah. I had questions about Flash, you know, like what you were just talking about there. There's kind of like an evolving, there have been kind of trends back and forth in how much, you know, just rich, like how rich internet applications, what they're used for, and you know, so... Apple's had a big effect on that for everybody, but I think also I'm sure you've seen like the oatmeal comic about, you know, what I actually want on a restaurant site and what I get, you know, and that kind of thing. And I think that there's like great play. I mean, my personal opinion, but I do see this among other web developers, is that there's nothing wrong with, you know, using rich internet application technologies, but some people just do it like way overboard. And I don't know. Do you have guidance that you give to people? Is that, I mean, do you see people doing whole page Flash sites, and do you see that as appropriate personally?
Well, so I generally don't see it as appropriate, especially not now when so much of the world is around smartphones and tablets, and on some of those, you know, on a majority of those tablets, especially, that you don't have access to the Flash player. So I think anymore, it's not a good idea to do your entire site in Flash. And I don't know if it ever was a really good idea to do your entire site in Flash. I, like everyone else, I always hated sites that I would go to, and I'd have to either install Flash on my phone, which I couldn't do at the time, or you have to sit through a big, crazy, splashy animation. So I think that it, in general, you know, it's not a good idea to have an all-Flash site, or an all-Silverlight site, for that matter. Where I think that the niche kind of was, and maybe still is today, is around some heavy-duty visualization, where you're doing a lot of charts and graphs. You're doing, you know, some very heavy lifting on the client side, where Flash or Flex or Silverlight could still be used today. But one of the things that's happening is increasingly JavaScript is getting better and the underlying browser engines are getting better. So a lot of the stuff that just wasn't possible for performance reasons before and Flash got used for is now coming under the realm of JavaScript and HTML5. So I think that even a lot of those reasons are starting to go away.
And one thing that I've seen going back a long time, starting, I think, with like rich typography. You know, people would use if Flash is installed, you know, like QFON or things like that, or Cipher. If Flash is installed, you know, use the nice Flash engine or typography. And if not, you know, the site's still going to work, but it'll just fall back to something else.
Use Comic Sans.
Exactly. By something else, I did not mean Comic Sans. You know, and I'm wondering if things will just keep moving that way. I mean, obviously the whole polyfill idea, but you know, if the browser supports audio or video or you know, all these, you know, local storage, use it. Otherwise, fall back to Flash for that, you know, if required.
Yep. And I think, to be honest, that'll happen for a little while where, you know, Flash, and this is one of the things that I think even though I'm biased as an Adobe employee and someone who's spent a lot of time doing Flash, one of the things that bothers me about the way developers and kind of the press treat Flash now is that I think that they've forgotten a lot of the legacy that Flash had and kind of the innovations that people looked at what the web could be and then built HTML5 specifications and built JavaScript around that. Things like typography, things like video, things like animation. As you mentioned, Flash was kind of used as a stopgap or the main solution there. And as HTML and JavaScript have caught up technology-wise, Flash has moved to either higher value-added things, like we have 3D support now in Flash Player, or have stopped being used at all, like the case is for some of the offline storage stuff. So I think that there will be a role for Flash eventually, but I hope that the role is limited to things that it does really well, and you stop having to use it for basic things like typography or video or that kind of thing.
Yeah, a lot of people seem to forget that, you know, this new internet boom that they're seeing now, a lot of it was built on Flash video and in some cases, you know, Flash for webcam chatting and things like that, that, you know, and now they're trying to migrate HTML5 specs to be able to do that. And I think that's great. I've said this before for Silverlight, because it means that they get to move on and come up with other things to do.
Yep. Yeah, and I think that's, yeah, exactly. And Silverlight has done a great job of that. I think Flash is doing a good job of that. You know, the sooner we get to the point where HTML can do everything, you know, I think in general, the happier I'll be, because I love the sort of the elegance of and the idea that HTML brings in terms of it's a one single universal standard in general. The browsers can all kind of compete on performance to make it run really well. So I would like to see Flash used for only those things it's good at, and I'd like to see HTML continue to evolve and start to take over some of the things that it used to do.
That actually might be a good segue into the Edge tool.
Yes, yes. Yeah, exactly. I don't know how much do you guys know about Edge in general, and I know the audience will be slightly different, so we can kind of start from the beginning. I'm just kind of, from a sort of brain dump standpoint, I'm curious what you guys have heard about it or how you heard about it.
I know that it looks a lot like, and I'm going to show my age here, but last time I worked with Flash, it was version 4. And it looked a lot like the same kind of timeline creation, but for JavaScript animations and HTML5 kind of stuff.
Yep, exactly. So basically, we realized we realized a long time ago, and you know, even before the whole Steve Jobs thing, we understood that HTML5 was pretty important to what was happening on the web. And we realized that we were a center for creative people who wanted to do things on the web. And so we started working on kind of a prototype of what would it look like to be able to have an animation tool for the browser. And as the HTML spec kind of finalized and there was actually, you know, had broader support across browsers, we were able to do a lot more with that. And so the first iteration of that, we have a preview of a tool called Adobe Edge, which uses jQuery to do a lot of the animation. There's some CSS3 code in there that I think we're planning on leveraging eventually. So you could either, you know, it would basically use CSS3 when it can and then fall back to JavaScript. But it's essentially a timeline-based animation tool for doing JavaScript and HTML animations, so that the, you know, either After Effects people who want to move to web animation or even Flash developers or designers who are used to that timeline and want to target HTML5, you can use now Edge to do that.
And I guess going back to what you were saying earlier, that Adobe's main thing is in selling the development tools, and you don't charge for the Flash, you know, player. So, I mean, really, as long as you're selling great tools that make it easy to do great things in browsers, that it's not, I mean, it really fits your business model still. I mean, it's not like, yep, a big dramatic shift. It's just keeping up with the changes in technology.
Yep, exactly. And that was, and we got maybe dinged maybe a little bit correctly by folks for saying, you know, we dropped the ball in HTML5 or we weren't embracing HTML5 enough. And I think some of that's a little bit unfair just because as we were working to embrace it, the spec was still changing rapidly and we don't control a browser. So we can't, you know, make innovations at the browser level. We have to kind of wait for those things to actually gain adoption. But we've been working with our customers pretty closely for a while now to figure out what they wanted us to do when it came to HTML5. And so Edge is the first real designer tool that revolves around that idea of doing animations using CSS3 and JavaScript. And then Dreamweaver has HTML5 support now as well. So if you're doing the Dreamweaver kind of half design, half development, there are HTML5 APIs in there that you can get code completion for and support for and things like that. So we've moved at, a pace the fastest that we could because we're so dependent on other people kind of making HTML5 actually work at more of an infrastructure level.
So is there some kind of, I would assume, like we were talking about earlier, the kind of fallback support? If I'm doing something and I want to make use of, you know, HTML5, CSS3 capabilities, but I may have a browser that doesn't support that and may want to drop back to Flash, is there any kind of, you know, I don't know, guidance or help on doing that kind of thing?
Yeah, and you know, there's not really, as far as what we've got, there's not really much that we have that does help that. We have, partly because a lot of that happens at sort of a low-level API, you know, where either I want to play video, either I'm going to use the Flash video player, I'm going to use the HTML5 internal video player, and that depends on, you know, do you have the right codecs, or do you have the right version of the video so you can play those in different ways. So we have, for the purpose of animation, really focused on keeping the two worlds separate. And so if you want to do animation using HTML5, you can use Edge, and then if you don't have that, it'll just not play the animation. So it'll still work the same way as graceful degradation should work on the web. Mm-hmm. It just won't play your animation. It'll be a little bit more basic experience. And I think that's a relatively good way to go as of right now.
One of the issues with designer tools like Edge and Blend and other similar tools is the human readability of the stuff that they spit out.
Yeah.
So how does Edge do in that regard?
I think it's a little bit of a philosophical debate because I think it does a pretty good job because basically what we do is instead of trying to write a bunch of JavaScript code, you know, that's going to be in line with some of your div tags or anything like that, what we do is we add two script files to the project. We have an Edge script file and then actually two Edge script files, and we have a third file that's just a JSON object that represents everything that happens in the tool. So as soon as you start animating or changing things within Edge, we modify that JSON file that's separate from your regular HTML page. And when they all come together, those two Edge scripts kind of parse that JSON object on the fly and then play the animation there in the browser. So the compiled version, or the, if you look at Google Developer Tools version, will show all the animation. But if you actually go view source, none of that animation JavaScript or none of the animation stuff is in there because it's all in this separate JSON file. So I think in general, I like that model because I think it sort of separates the very visual world of animation from whatever the web developer wanted to do. But I could see that people would maybe not be happy with that approach and would want something else. But I think it code generated by a tool like that is always going to be suspect. And I think this was the best way of taking that code and kind of abstracting it and keeping it out of the way of people who don't want to deal with it.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, was this that tool? I think it was. I was looking at one and it had a lot of like div class equals paragraph and things like that. And it kind of, like you're saying, it's, if you don't want to look at it, then you don't look at it. But it's kind of like, well, there is a paragraph tag,
Yep, exactly. We tried to, we left the markup completely intact. You can open up an existing HTML page and animate objects on that HTML page, but we won't touch any of that underlying markup. It's all in that separate file. And so I think that's a generally good approach. People will maybe not like that approach universally, but I think considering the general problem of code generated by a tool, it was the least bad option we had, basically.
So I'm confused a little bit on, I'd read earlier and looking at your blog earlier today, mentioning about Flash Builder 4.5, and it was talking about packaging applications, including like Apple iOS and mobile. And I'm not sure does that also then generate HTML? And if so, how does that fit in with Edge?
No, that's actually completely separate. So as we talked about kind of earlier on, the world of Flash or Silverlight for that matter in the browser, these kind of rich internet application technologies, has definitely been impacted by the rise of iPhones and iPads, iOS, and just general smartphone, the world.
Mm-hmm.
So what we have done is we said, well, we still have a lot of really great client-side technology, and kind of more importantly, we have a very vibrant designer and developer community, so how can we make sure that Flash and Flex are applicable for what they want to do? And the solution we came up with was, well, let's let them use Flash and Flex, and then we will do some work on the compiler side so that when they click the button, they can build a native Android project or a native iOS project. The difference or the sort of the fine print there is that it's not going to be a native project, like it'll have native iOS components or native Android components. It'll all still be Flash and Flex on the UI side, but it does compile down to a native project format format. So you get a .apk file for Android, you get a .ipa file for iOS, and you can put those apps on their respective app stores and kind of make money and monetize them the same way.
Okay. And was that, I remember a long time ago when all this kind of, iOS war thing, there was that section 3.1.1 or 3.3.1 or whatever. And it was saying that the original development language had to be I think you know.
Yep.
What I'm trying to ask.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because basically we had released this thing where you could build iPhone applications with Flash. Mm-hmm. And then shortly thereafter, Apple came out and said, hey, we're going to add this section to our developer agreement that says you have to code this in Xcode. It has to be Objective-C. That had kind of a big impact across a number of things, beyond even just Flash. Think about Unity. Think about some of the other tools, Corona. Think about Appcelerator. All these tools that did sort of the same thing were impacted as well. And so a few months after Apple added that section, they removed that section. And they, I think, decided that these apps are still playing by the rules. We're still making money on them in the exact same way that we're making money on the other ones. So we'll go ahead and let them in. And since then, that's been the case.
Okay. Thanks. I realize some of these are kind of old questions and all that, but I don't know.
Exactly. It's been really hard to keep up with, and yes, you can kind of see, you can almost feel morale at Adobe kind of move up and down as Apple did those things. So yeah, I think that was, and some people are still. I talked to people today, customers that reference that decision and say, well, I can't put my apps on the App Store anymore, can I? But so yeah, that's to be totally clear, they're definitely allowed on the App Store. In fact, Apple has even started promoting some of the applications built with Flash in their sort of new and newsworthy section on the iTunes App Store. So it seems like everyone has now come to a general agreement that these are okay. They're making money for everyone who builds them as well as Apple, so it works all around.
Okay.
Yeah, in fact, I think some of their top sellers were actually built originally in languages other than Objective-C. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but I do remember, like, every time there's one built in Monotouch, Miguel de Acasa makes sure that he points out, hey, look, this one is in the top 25 for, you know, this month, and it was built using Unity or Monotouch. And I know there's some Flash ones in there and even some, you know, Appcelerator and PhoneGap ones as well.
Yep, exactly. And I think that, yeah, you know, Apple still does a really great job of basically making sure that their App Store is a premium experience and the apps that go on that App Store are a premium experience. And some of the Flash apps that get submitted, I'm sure, do not get approved. But a lot of people have spent a ton of time and really put some polish on these applications, especially around games, so that they fit that Apple standard and still, you know, work really well within that ecosystem. So I think it made sense for everyone if those apps were allowed in the store, and then Apple just goes through their regular app approval process to figure out which ones shouldn't make the cut and which ones should.
We have a Twitter question from Chris Edwards. What are the best tools for automating testing of Flash UIs?
Yeah, that's a good question. One of the ones that we suggest is HP QuickTest Pro. We've worked pretty closely with them to make sure that the QuickTest Pro works within the Flex and Flash ecosystem pretty well. So as far as the best tool for automated testing of Flash UIs, I would say HP's QuickTest Pro. The caveat there is it doesn't work for mobile devices or mobile applications yet, and I'm not sure what the end solution will be there, but QuickTest Pro is the one, at least for desktop Flash, and for in-browser Flash is the way to go.
Okay. Seems pretty straightforward. Let's talk a little bit about Adobe Air. It was the first one of the build a cross-platform desktop app using HTML and JavaScript tools. And for a while there, everyone was using Twirl and TweetDeck and the other one that I can't remember but came before Twirl. And everything was being built in Air, and it was nice because you'd have the consistent UI across, you know, Mac and Windows. But there seemed to be some memory problems, or at least problems with memory that were to Air, which, you know, some of them could have been the code that was being written in Air, and some of them could have been problems with Air itself. And so it kind of fell out of, not really fell out of favor, but you don't hear as much about it anymore. It's more like I was surprised when I went to the Flex user group last week or week before last. It's been a while.
Yep, actually two weeks, yeah, something like that, yeah.
I was surprised to find out that the Nook Color from Barnes & Noble comes with a version of Adobe Air pre-installed on it, and that some other Android phone versions also come with them on there. So, you know, one of the things was the whole upgrade cycle. So you would, you know, every time you'd launch an Air app, something would need to update, either the app itself or Air would have an update. And it was always kind of a weird update cycle. But what's going on with Air besides, you know, shipping with Android now? And I think you can even build, along with the Flash packaging stuff for iOS and Android, you can of course build that using Air and package it the same way, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, in fact, Air is what really underlines a lot of that mobile story, because we use the Air compiler and a lot of the Air APIs in terms of access to low-level functionality like file system access or accelerometer GPS access. A lot of those APIs were originally put in for the Air desktop version, kind of that beyond the browser APIs situation, and we were able to take that, and now Air is what we use for our mobile story. But yeah, you're right that Air kind of had this. Air is one of the things that I hugely lament for a lot of reasons. I think it was a really fantastic idea to this whole bring web applications to the browser or to the desktop. I loved the fact that Adobe was embracing both Flash and HTML because Air had its own version of WebKit inside it. So we were on the cutting edge when it came to embracing WebKit as a sort of general purpose HTML runtime. And yeah, you're right. There were just a couple of issues there around sort of the performance, some of the memory usage. And I think that's where we learned a lot about what does it really mean to create something for the desktop. Previously, we'd had the browser version of Flash Player where at the end of 30 minutes or 60 minutes or whatever it was, you were closing your browser, so memory was not as big of an issue. But if you're using a desktop runtime, you're going to have those things open forever, and you have got to be making sure that you're not misusing memory. And so we had a couple of missteps there, I think, and you're right, people started to give Air a bad rap. And then as it sort of evolved, people moved into building mobile applications and the desktop was not quite as critical anymore. So what we did then is started to take that same Air paradigm and just apply it to mobile devices. And so now using Air, you can target iOS, you can target Android, and you can target the BlackBerry Playbook for building apps, just like you could on the desktop, but these are mobile applications.
I may be out of sync. I am in a lot of things, but I really like Air apps still. And all, also parallel, but Silverlight out of browser. I'm using I use Seismic Desktop 2 for Twitter. And then I like Pomodoro for Pomodoro. I it seems like some of the best Pomodoro apps are still Air apps. But I did want to ask about, Scott asked about the updates. And it seems like updates are pretty regular. And I do seem to notice, it's like, oh no, another update. And I think that's the one time when I get, aside from the occasional website I go to that has, ridiculous, can't get around the restaurant website because it's Flash overkill. But the updates, regular updates, I don't know. I guess I just wonder, why so many of them.
And we're really talking about Reader here, too. Reader is the biggest offender, yeah. I think.
Reader's definitely one. I mean, I'm sure there's security and all that is a constant threat. But it seems like there's always updates, but I don't know that I'm getting any new features out of it. Is it just all security stuff?
Yeah, unfortunately, for the most part, it really is a lot of security stuff. Because with Air, you have a version of the Flash Player bundled inside of it. And so then any vulnerability that is found in Flash Player is also going to be in Air. And so when we find and fix those, we push out the Air fix and the Flash Player fix at the same time. Mm. So you do end up getting, and it's, I think we have worked internally to try to find a way where we can make that upgrade process kind of better and easier and more seamless. And we've tried a few things, and I think we're going to continue to work on that. But I agree that's not been a very great user experience. This, the updates have been not a great user experience. And it's one of those things that, unfortunately, it's a reality of the way we have to do things in terms of patching bugs, but we are always looking at things we can do to make it more seamless and less intrusive for the user. So it's something we know is not great right now, and it's something that we're trying to fix sort of in the best way that we can, definitely.
I almost wish that, now the feel of Chrome is just automatically install updates and that kind of thing. And I wish that for Air, I could just say once and for all, every time I start up, I don't care. Sure, go ahead and install. And if I have to click one, yes, once for, security, for administrative privileges, that's fine. But because there's two checkboxes. You have to not click the ignore this and then you go through and you say, yes, I accept. So you have to miss one checkbox and check the next. And I wonder how many people miss the wrong ones and get confused and stuff.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think some of that will come as we can work closer with the operating system, vendors. Mm-hmm. So I think Apple and Adobe have done a really good job recently of talking about how to work better together. And so hopefully the fruits of some of those conversations will result in a better user experience on that end, just like Google and Chrome kind of talking to us about how to integrate the Flash Player has resulted in a better experience with Flash Player and Chrome. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of partnership stuff, I think, in the end, because we don't control the operating system. And so those discussions are always kind of happening. But especially recently, Microsoft and Adobe, I feel like, have done a really nice job of talking and collaborating. Things like IE9 and Flash support there, hardware acceleration. And so that, in theory, carries over across a lot of the products.
Cool. Yeah. Now, just so I'm understanding, would that take collaboration in order to change the update? So, because I work a lot of apps I use from Joe Schmo have auto update features? Is that kind of a bigger deal than I'm thinking?
So I don't think so. And this is, we're getting out of the realm of my expertise, mm-hmm. but I always understood it as we weren't able to hook in to the same APIs as Joe Schmo, just because sort of the bigger implications of what we're running on the machine is sort of a runtime versus Joe Schmo application. So I think that's been the main issue, but I don't actually know for sure if that is the issue. It could be something completely on our side, but in the conversations I have had with people who I feel like know that stuff, the implication has always been there's sort of an extra step that we have to go to because of the nature of AIR, and so we're letting other applications build on top of us, kind of thing.
Gotcha.
But I could be completely off base on that. So if someone is listening in saying that's absolutely wrong, I would love to get that email and then I could forward it around and figure out how we can do it better just on our side internally. So I would welcome that feedback.
We went over Flash pretty quickly and you were saying that there are some new features, but we didn't really talk about them in detail. I mean, you talked about 3D support. What are some of the big things that are available for Flash now?
Yeah, the big one really, so Flash in the browser, the big one is definitely is 3D support. A little while ago, maybe I guess it's 6 months ago, something like that, we released this idea of what we call stage video. So instead of having to render the video at the Flash kind of display list level, we punched directly through to the video card and we could render the video directly on the GPU, kind of the way most operating systems do it today. And that gave us basically like QuickTime level performance for video in the Flash player, which is pretty awesome. So based on kind of that technology, we said, well, wouldn't the exact same thing be cool if we could do that with 3D? So instead of having to render all the 3D features at the Flash display level, if we could just punch right through to the GPU and render all this 3D work directly on the hardware. We already have the APIs for doing 3D. We already have all the functionality at the API level for doing shaders and things like that. So we just now expose that directly to the GPU, which opened up kind of this whole new world of performance. So the 3D community that we had started building their frameworks on this new, what we call Stage 3D API, which gave them sort of a wide open space to build some really incredible looking stuff, like kind of console game level kind of stuff with Flash in the browser.
And that's an important distinction to make here. We're talking about pushing polygons and triangles and not wear your stupid funky glasses so that it looks like the avatar alien is walking towards you.
That's a very good point. Yeah, exactly. When I say 3D, I mean, 3D. Yeah, not the 3D things flying at you 3D, but just the 3Ds you would play in games. And I think that's been really, I think that, and that's as we talked about in the beginning of the show, Flash is definitely evolving in terms of what web developers are going to want to do with it. And I think we have a pretty good story on mobile devices where web developers and Flash developers can target mobile applications, which is really where a lot of the energy is. And we're starting to get a pretty good story with the high-end game developers and kind of 3D developers who want the reach that Flash provides, but have always lacked in terms of technology and performance. So now we're catching up with that technology performance gap so they can leverage the reach. And that's going to mean that Flash can kind of focus on that when it comes to tooling and features, and we'll start to build, into Dreamweaver or Edge or whatever the tool is, some of the things that make that rich in the browser with HTML5 and JavaScript easier to do. So it allows us as a company to kind of focus our energies on where people are using the technology and kind of where it's best suited for, instead of trying to push Flash in the browser for things it doesn't really belong or shouldn't be used for.
I almost wonder if there's another story there for being able to compile like your Flash movies down to WebGL code, so you could kind of offload that to instead of Adobe having to optimize the Flash runtime necessarily in all aspects, being able to push that to WebGL and having the browser and platform manufacturers be the ones that are kind of responsible for making WebGL run really fast on the hardware.
Yep, and we've definitely talked about that, because actually some of the work that we've done around, basically compiling to iOS or compiling to Android is work that you could, in theory, look at and say, could we just compile this down to WebGL? And I know we're not focusing our energy on that right now, but I think that is definitely something that could be kind of cool, and people have looked at from a theoretical perspective to see, is it possible? What work would it take? So I think that there could be some cool stuff around that, sometime as we get more diverse and as kind of more people start asking for features that maybe are better suited at the WebGL layer and not the Flash player level, definitely. So I have a question for you guys, if I can interrupt, or if I can jump in and ask, because I'm going to be at Build next or 2 weeks from now. So I'm really excited to kind of check out Build and hang out with the Microsoft guys again. So from your standpoint, in terms of cool shit on the client, what is the most exciting stuff coming up at Build, and what should I, as an Adobe guy, be on the lookout for?
We don't know, and we can't say.
Yeah, I specifically can't say. They'll kick my door down and beat me up.
It's like the worst audience to ask ever.
Yeah.
But, well, I, as I started the question, I realized I was asking probably with people who, you know, was who couldn't say anything.
You know, Kevin. So, yeah. Kevin could maybe, if he's got any ideas. I work at Microsoft. I can't. If I knew anything, I can't say anything. And usually the safest thing for me has been to not know anything.
yep, and exactly. Actually, yeah, I know that well. Yep.
I can't. I registered too late. I couldn't get into Build. So I take good notes for me.
Oh, you're not going, John?
No, I wanted to. And other people on my team too. I registered months ahead, but it was they had a very small quota for Microsoft employees. So I may try and drive up and meet people there, but you know, during after hours things, but can't get in.
Yeah, one of my buddies had the same thing. He works at Microsoft as well, and he was hoping to go to Build, and it sounds like you guys just really got cut off from the quota. So I think it'll be a fantastic show, and I'm excited to see, especially with this whole HTML5 Windows 8 thing, you know, what the developer story is, and then also how Adobe's tools can fit in. So I'm not, Kevin, I don't know if you can, you know, have any amazing insight into what would be there. It seems like things are kind of locked down, so I don't want to have you spill any secrets. I'm just kind of curious as to what's been public that I may have missed.
I know nothing.
Nice. Fair enough.
Just what's been in the press so far.
Oh, so one thing we can speculate on, because we literally know nothing about it, is so right now Flash and Via Air targets iOS and Android. What about Windows Phone 7?
That I would love to see. Actually, I don't know if I have any news about that either. I think we'd love to talk to Microsoft. I'm sure we are talking to Microsoft, but I haven't heard anything about it. So I would doubt if they say something at Build, that would be a huge surprise to me. So I haven't heard anything about it at all. That would be cool, but I think, you know, I think in their defense or Microsoft's defense, you know, they've got a pretty good story with Silverlight and Windows Phone 7 and their development experience. So I'm not, you know, they, I don't know how much they care about getting the Air and Flash developers building apps for their platform. It seems like they've got pretty good momentum, but I think, you know, that would be great for us to add that to our platform. So I'm sure we're talking to Microsoft, but I don't know if I've heard of anything that would be announceable or would be anything that would be newsworthy. But it does seem like it'll be a really good show, because Microsoft's been sort of oddly quiet, pulling the Apple-esque, the sort of silence before the calm, where they could just drop a bunch of huge, amazing bombs. So I'm really kind of stoked that I got to go and I get to see what the news is.
Yeah, it'll kind of go, the way that those things usually go is when Microsoft is really quiet about something, it's usually an egg they're getting ready to lay. But we'll have to see what comes out. I don't think anyone will be surprised, and this isn't speaking from any position of knowledge, but
I don't know. There's so
I don't
much.
I think everyone's going to be unhappy either.
There's so much speculation about the whole Silverlight versus HTML versus WPF versus C++ native code or managed code. So I do think that there will be secrets will finally be revealed, and I am looking forward to hearing the story, just so we can stop with all the rampant speculation.
You know, it's
so that all my friends from Microsoft can quit looking at me sideways when they come over.
It's an interesting time to be a developer. I mean, there's definitely with you know, what's the emphasis on the Windows side, but also just in general, you know, there's kind of renewed, like, you know, with Objective-C. And, you know, I mean, just all different platforms and just looking at where things are going. And I don't know.
Well, and another thing that's interesting is for so long, developers treated memory like it was, you know, oil. It was an inexhaustible resource. And now they're developing inside of browsers where they don't have control over, you know, the garbage collection. They don't have control over how much RAM is on the system. They don't even know if it's going to be running on a full-blown desktop with a
quad core Intel i7 processor, or if it's going to be running on some, you know, third party Android handset that was made in China and you know, has the cheapest RAM available. So they're trying to kind of hit this sweet spot in between with not only their JavaScript, but also with, you know, iOS native code, you know, and Android Java code. Suddenly they're very aware of how much RAM and how much heap size, you know, their programs take. And I think that's the most interesting thing, I think, that's coming out of this, but it's not getting talked about a lot. But it is something that people are starting to become more aware of, at least the ones in the web development kind of sphere.
Yep, I totally agree. And I think you're right, it's not getting talked about nearly enough, but that's been, you know, from a Flash perspective, that's been one of the huge things, is that our Flash community is used to being able to leverage the entire, you know, the entire part of the machine, and Flash has definitely gotten a bad rap because it enabled a lot of memory intensive applications, and, you know, we didn't optimize when we should have in some cases. But yeah, moving to mobile, you're right, you have to worry about that at a very, very low level. So it's a very interesting time to be a developer, and just the problems you have to deal with now are much different than the problems you had to worry about sort of even in the browser days. So it's been kind of cool to see how people react to that.
I mean, I even saw a CSS3 talk kind of about animations, and they were talking about using request keyframe versus something else because it would adversely affect the battery life of a mobile device if you didn't. They had done tests and they'd said, you know, using request keyframe in this way, you know, causes the, you know, battery to not be used as much. It's like, wow. So it's interesting when you constrain the resources like that, kind of the inventiveness that comes out. And mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's, I mentioned sort of at the beginning that my general job is cool shit on the client, and that's, you know, that's really one of the challenges, is it turns out that it's kind of expensive from a CPU and memory perspective to do really great animations and transitions and kind of, you know, UIs, and how do you take some of that cool richness and maintain the benefits that it brings from a user experience standpoint without bringing in all the negatives it brings in from a performance standpoint. And so that's going to be an interesting, I think, next 6 months to a year on the Adobe side. Can we and how do we make it so that you can still be creative, but you're creative in the context of the, it's not, you know, choppy animations, not choppy transitions, and it's not killing your battery life.
Mm-hmm. And the whole, you know, I mean, there's definitely, like, people have gotten the message with the idea of scaling content so that it works well on a desktop and, you know, mobile. And, you know, maybe I want to show a lot less information and strip things down. And you know, I think that maybe that's somewhere that we'll be going with that too in the future, is things that downgrade or scale nicely in terms of performance impact as well.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, and it is, yeah, and I love that analogy of we used to use memory like oil, because that's a very, very true way to put it. And I think that there are, eventually the way the world will have to work is that to figure out a way to wean themselves off oil, and developers are definitely having to do that with memory and be a lot more efficient in how they do things. So it's going to be, I think it'll be an interesting 6 to 12 months, definitely.
Or we have to go nuclear.
Is that what the HTML JavaScript option is going nuclear?
I pronounce it nuclear. Is that okay?
I think so.
Well, I think we're a little over an hour. This is cool.
There's got to be a lot of stuff going on. So we've already talked a little bit about the new version, new features in Flash, new things kind of coming in Edge and things like that. What's been going on in the Adobe Labs space? I haven't been there to that site in a few months. I mean, I used to check it a lot to see what was going on in terms of SDKs and stuff that they're just trying out. The last thing I remember going there for was for the browser snapshot tool that they have.
Oh, the browser lab thing where you could look at different versions.
Yeah.
So
what's the, what if we were going to recommend that someone go look at something on the lab site, what would it be?
It definitely depends on the audience, because actually, you know, on labs, there hasn't really been a ton of stuff that's been really cutting edge or new on labs that we've put up. And I think that there's the main reason for that is that we have our big sort of designer developer conference coming up in October, which is maybe a good segue to kind of one of the things I wanted to mention at the end. And so it's called Adobe Max. It's in Los Angeles at the beginning of October. And so we're at kind of a point in our developer cycle where a lot of teams are waiting until max to show off what they've got. And so Labs right now has not been super populated over the past couple of weeks. There is still definitely previews of Flash Player 11, which has the 3D stuff, as well as 64-bit support for operating system and browsers. So there's some cool stuff. I think Flash Player and Air are both pretty cool. Labs is where the Edge preview is. So there's still definitely some stuff up there, but a lot of the cool stuff, I think we'll have to wait till our big conference.
There's I just looked there. There's Adobe Muse.
Yeah, I would hesitate to point this audience at Muse. It's okay. It's like front page, I think, for HTML and for building HTML pages. Essentially, that's a bad way of putting it. It's basically a tool that we targeted at print designers, so people who know InDesign really well and wanted to bring those skills and create web content with them. And so it's really targeted more at the hardcore print designer who wants to move to the web as opposed to anything that I think this crowd would be interested in.
Got it. And that earlier I was complaining about HTML markup that I'd seen, and I think that's where it was that I saw it.
You can't get
that right if you're. I mean, it's an impossible problem, I think, to create beautiful markup when somebody's crafting visually.
Yeah, and I think Muse is a cool tool. It's not something that I would use, and it's not something that developers are going to use. But there's definitely a huge segment of the population, that print designer who wants to create content. So I think it's a good sort of first step for those people into the HTML world, definitely.
Well, I had one question, which was just that some client apps like Photoshop Express, I think, and some apps, those had been moving to being delivered via Air, if I think I'm correct there.
Yeah, some of those definitely are Air. So, in fact, Muse is built on Air. So we're starting to build some of the lighter applications on Air, which is, I think, a decent deployment model for some of those lighter tools. Mm-hmm. The other thing, actually, I don't know if I can talk much about this. What can I say about this? I don't want to get anything in trouble. So I'll say this, and then you can cut it out later if you need to. But basically, I think we're also looking at how we can deploy, because we clearly want to play in the mobile space as well with a lot of our tools, and we showed some of that, I think, at Max last year with the helper applications to Photoshop that were delivered specifically for the iPad and tablets and that kind of thing. So I think, now that we have a better mobile story, I think Adobe is looking at what we can do in terms of deploying our mobile tools on Air as well. So we kind of have a nice Air story there as far as eating our own dog food and building some of our lighter desktop apps in Air, and then also deploying some of our mobile applications with Air.
Oh, cool.
Oh, so that's what I was going to ask about when you mentioned Max. What kind of weird dancing troupe are you going to have this year at Max?
I have not heard what the cool... Well, you mean the cool, awesome dancing troupe, right? I have not heard what the pre-Max...
Actually, they had one that was weird, and they had one that was like a group of kids who worked on stuff, and they were really, really cool.
Yeah, the kids were cool. I don't know what we're gonna do this year. I have not actually heard what the plans are. Because one of the things that everyone wants to know is the special guest. Because in the past couple of years we had Mark Hamill the first year, then we had William Shatner last year, who comes and does our sneaks. So we kind of have this now trend of having cool science fiction characters in our show, but I'm not sure what's going to happen this year. So I've been holding off the information as long as possible because I want to be surprised. So I'm going to find out with everyone else, hopefully.
Obviously, the obvious choice, I think, is Steve Jobs.
Well, yeah, exactly.
He's
now.
He's got some spare time now.
He does have some spare time now, yeah. So, we could be like, hey, Steve, you want to come hang out and be our special guest and do sneaks for us?
Hang from a trapeze.
Yeah, exactly. You could do the dance show and the dance number in the beginning.
And the other big question that John will not be able to answer is, will Ballmer do an interpretive dance of Windows 8 for Windows 8?
Yeah, I don't know. And if he does, I won't be there to see it in person. Which just tears me up.
You got to wonder what an interpretive dance for Windows 8 would look like. I think that would be a fun contest for someone to run.
That's true.
If you had to express Windows 8 in dance, what would that look like?
Well, you've got to have a head and a body and a script tag somewhere.
Exactly, a script tag. The combination of XAML and JavaScript or whatever they're going to do. Yeah, I think it'd be funny.
So do we have any more questions? We can move on to the Pimp Yo Stuff section.
which is where you basically just talk about any what kind of upcoming engagements do you have. Obviously, you mentioned Max. I'm sure you'll be there because all the cool kids get to go to Max.
Yep, I'll be at Max in Los Angeles October, I think, 2nd to 6th. So if you're doing mobile development and you're looking for a conference in October, I think Max would be a great one to go to. As I mentioned, I will also be at Build in a couple weeks, and I would love to talk to anyone who's around at Build and wants to either complain about Adobe stuff or talk about Adobe stuff or share some perspective on Microsoft stuff. Microsoft developers are just a lot of fun to talk to because they're pretty savvy in general, and they have been a lot more experienced than sort of general web developers, so I really always enjoy talking to Microsoft developers. So if anyone is at Build and recognizes my face, I'm more than happy to buy you a beer, and I would love to get your insight into, you know, what Microsoft's doing, what Adobe's doing, what the mobile market looks like. So I'd love to have some connections at Build if anyone's around.
And that is the number one conference tip for Microsoft conferences: is find the developer evangelist, especially when the bar's open.
Yep, exactly. That is that's my favorite part of my job, is I get to pay for beers for developers. And, you know, when developers get drunk, it's always a thing of sort of bizarre beauty, because they, you know, they start being really honest with you, and then sometimes they spill secrets they're not supposed to share. So it's always a lot of fun. So I always enjoy being able to buy developers alcohol.
Okay, anything else that you specifically want or need to mention, Ryan?
No, I just want to say thank you guys very much for having me on. John, it's great to finally touch base and sort of meet you in quotes. I'm sorry that you will not be at Build, so I can't actually buy you a beer.
Maybe I'll sneak in. I'm working on putting together a catering outfit, so we'll see.
Well, if you sneak in, let me know. I'd love to grab drinks. And then if you're up here in Seattle, I still need to take Scott out for a beer at some point. So, you know, if you're up here and you guys want to get beers as a, you know, Herding Code reunion/beer thing, I would love to hang out and chill and whatever. The fine Seattle bar establishments.
Sounds great.
John is well acquainted with them.
I can imagine.
And I'm even allowed back in a few of them.
Nice. We'll find one that you weren't allowed into and we'll sneak you in. That'll be more fun, I think.
Again, with my catering outfit.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, groovy. Well, thanks for joining us on this week's episode of Herding Code.
Well, thank you guys very much.
We'll talk to you everyone later.